welcome back to another exciting week of the Geek Whisperers. I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Matthew Brender.
So I'm looking to stir up trouble this week. I'm not going to lie. We
Why
decided
are you not looking to stir up trouble,
yeah.
Amy.
Okay, fine. Hashtag.
What trouble are you getting us into this week? Sorry.
Well, this week, my controversial statement, or the thing that we're going to debate, and before we went on air, we were already arguing about it. So I look forward to see what's going to happen here. Does consumer strategy work in enterprise IT? I say no.
Well, then let's debate.
So I've got a few topics underneath that, a few sort of tactics, ideas, things I've seen. First up, hiring a celebrity, and meaning a celebrity that's a little bit out of context. I'm not talking about having Beyonce show up, although that could be potentially true. But hiring a celebrity in some context, but somebody who's not native to the community. So these are, I wouldn't even call them hired unicorns, because unicorn implies part of the community to me. This is truly like an outsider. Hiring somebody based on their clout or...
Right. Do you know what the consumer side calls those people?
No, what do they call them?
Influencers. Yeah. I was looking at a blog post from, I don't know, HubSpot or someplace like that, or Marketo, I don't remember, recently. And they were like going through like a hierarchy of influencers. And the highest level people, they were advocates, who are what we call influencers, who are like people who are interested in brand stuff, you know, who advocate for brand. And then there are these influencers who are just basically like internet celebrities, who have so much influence, anything they can say can like send an army of teenage girls to go do something.
Is this like the Tiger Beat of the consumer world?
kind of, except they range from the kids on YouTube, right? Have you seen those commercials now, right? Those makeup girls and stuff like that?
Yeah.
To people like Robert Scoble, who's a big, hairy, fat, white dude like me. Right? And the interesting thing is the mainstream tech strategy is to hire somebody like Robert Scoble, because that's an influencer in tech. But I think I may have cut off your thesis here, Amy.
Well, fair points. But my question is, does a Robert Scoble come from the community? You come from the community. Sure, you're a celebrity. if we hire you for your celebrity, people show up to meet John Mark Troyer. But you're from the community. So for me, the consumer strategy is, it doesn't matter whether you're from, about, or have anything to do with bubblegum, soda, whatever the heck it is. It doesn't matter. And my argument is that lack of authenticity is not a working strategy in IT.
It's really interesting to think about it. It's like, would I buy a virtualization platform from Michael Jordan?
There you go.
Because I would buy, like, I don't know, a pair of socks or something that Michael Jordan endorses and give it a shot, because I'm nostalgic for the good old days of the Chicago Bulls. But there's something specialized, and I think specialization will play a huge role in this conversation, that as you get down to a talent that's connected to a technology, it's not just looking for a name associated with the brand. It's also looking for someone of credibility, of a certain subject matter expertise. And to the best of my knowledge, Michael Jordan hasn't built a data center by hand any time recently. So in that way, he just doesn't maintain that influencer status that you might be able to apply to a Coca-Cola or to, I don't know, some sort of car. It just doesn't translate.
Well, Matt, you're not a marketer, so you're excused.
No. We've established this. I'm a self-loathing marketer, John.
Okay, so but Amy has no excuse. So somehow we've already confused branding and endorsement here on this podcast. So let's look at a couple examples. CDW goes out with a big ad campaign with Charles Barkley. I think they might have a different spokesperson at this point. Celebrity endorsement, right? Or we were at, what was the last conference I was at? Had a big sports dude and people were lined up. Oh, I was at Interop and somebody had brought in a big sports dude and people were getting autographs, right? That's one level of celebrity, right? And the Charles Barkley ads from CDW were hilarious, but had really not a whole lot to, they had a slight amount to do with IT, right? But Charles Barkley is not endorsing a router, right? He is in doing like funny skits about, you know, business, Dilberty business stuff. And then there is endorsement or, you know, on the other end, or kind of micro celebrity, the community celebrity on the other end, which would be, I suppose, somebody like me, but maybe even more would be, I don't know, famous computer scientists, or, and then somewhere in between, I don't want to call them layers, but I mean, what about somebody like, what if you brought to a next conference Leo Laporte or a Veronica Belmont or somebody like that, who are kind of tech journalists, but could, one, add some skill to your, one, they're professionals, which, you know, we are kind of professional, but, you know, they've been doing it, spoke talking heads for 10 or 15 years, and Leo for 20 years. And then two, they're kind of well known. So I would go, if you had Leo Laporte at a show, he has a big famous Twit network right now, and he's kind of cool, and he has a little interesting community. I'd go see him just to see what he's doing, right? So Amy, have I teased this out or confused it more by kind of drawing out those kind of three types of categories of celebrity hires for your IT spend?
No, I think that's a good point. And thinking about, you know, again, at the event space, celebrity works. It's a draw. Like every tech event has, or oftentimes will have, a speaker that is not necessarily related directly to technology, but has got something to say about life, or, it's an opportunity, right? It's a reward for the customers who attend to be able to see a big name speaker. That makes sense to me. I think about other roles they might play. That might be more of, again, a consumer-based strategy that would be more along the lines of kind of an endorsement or a real force fit. Just, you know, Michael Jordan being the perfect example in some ways of, you know, he could sell any consumer good practically, regardless of the limited connection. But, you know, I'm not sure. I trust him to set me up with the latest the latest router.
Yeah. Amy, I love this because it's really making me clarify some assumptions I make between consumer versus enterprise technology. And I think in consumer, there's almost this sense of the differentiation is really, you're already comparing apples to apples or oranges to oranges. And it's just what is bringing you toward one brand a little bit more than the other. And even if in the technology, if it's happening that way, whether things seem like they look the same at the layer at the very top, there's such intricate levels of expertise that are greatly impacted to the, that result in really huge sums of money, huge amounts of productivity, and change people's career trajectories. Whether they go with, say, an EMC storage array versus a NetApp storage array versus a newer one like a Pure system, like that's not just some. It's not like choosing Pepsi or Coke and it might taste a little different. It's skill sets that they have to learn and their career will depend upon. So I feel like there's like this more of an existential element attached to this, that your career is on the line of whether you understand this or not. And soda or socks will not make or break your career path.
Hmm. To John's point of, you know, if you think about your IT dollars, there are, I guess, some sort of traditional strategies you could use. They work across the board in terms of getting attention. You know, celebrity works, but it's interesting. And we've talked, you know, on many episodes, I think this is why it's on my mind, about that concept of unicorns or geek celebrity. And it really comes down to, we've all said, I mean, there is the ability to communicate their expertise, but it really is the passion and the deep expertise within a technology that kind of brings people up to that level, where, you know, their sessions are always jammed, or, you know, there you stop and get autographs practically from them, or they're signing books at an event. That kind of geek celebrity really resonates with a different element of the community. And I wonder if, I'm not sure all the marketing teams, maybe in IT or maybe the PR folks, I don't know that they see or understand the value they've got within their own four walls. I'm not sure they are always as exposed to it as maybe some of us deeper into the community space see the real value of the employee celebrity. Again, I think that's my argument too, that if you overfocus on that kind of traditional, traditional celebrity model, it does one thing. But if you don't leave enough in your budget to maybe promote some of your internal talent to really think about this different audience, you do yourself a disservice in the overall mix.
Yeah, I think it depends on your audience and on your goals, right? We are talking about stuff that's it's fairly technical. It's fairly bottom of the funnel, a marketer might say. I have seen kind of naive marketers come into the space with target lists for press of TechCrunch or target influencers or somebody like Robert Scoble. Or I remember back in the day, everyone's very excited when Robert came over to interview, I forget if it was our CEO or our CTO. And I like Robert, and Robert's a great guy, and he works harder than anybody else I know in his space, right? Amazing. But, you know, Robert Scoble, a lot of IT people don't even know who he is. He's a Silicon Valley sort of startup-y dude, gadgety dude. And he came over and interviewed us. And again, he's a smart guy, but he's not an enterprise guy. So his questions weren't really very interesting or relevant, or he was very new to the space. So as if your audience was practitioners, you know, there was a little bit of a celebrity factor there because he is a well-known dude, but it, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of value for them. Yeah. So if that audience. Now, if your audience is business buyers, then having, you know, hiring Dan Rather might make sense.
Yeah, you just won the game if you hire Dan Rather, but you're dead on that it comes back to who are you attempting to influence with your influencer. If you're trying to push people along in a buying cycle and they're interested in your technology but they don't quite trust it yet, getting somebody who's an influencer in a trusted position as a subject matter expert is the kind of person that will influence their trust in a product enough to maybe install it in production and really give it a test. Really take that extra leap of faith with something that they might not have trusted until they knew somebody that they trusted already because of their technical aptitude or their relationship to others, versus just trying to reach someone's eyes at all and get on their plate with somebody like a Charles Barkley.
I hear so much real-world experience in what you just said. I can tell that comes from actually thinking about boots on the ground. Hey, I did want to say, I think that enterprise has already figured this out. We have relationships with our customers that are long-term. We do all this stuff that social media does, and I think the consumer side is just grasping at it. They thought it was about engagement and likes and stuff, and now they're just figuring it out that it's about more than that. I think instead of the consumerization of IT, I think it's the enterprisation of consumer marketing. I think consumer marketing is becoming a lot more like enterprise marketing, and relate, you know, even media companies, right? Newspapers thought that they were these broadcasters, and now it turns out that the only online media thing that works is like an enterprise a relationship, but this long term trusted advisor sort of thing.
I got to jump in here because this leads us to tactic two that's on the table to discuss. So you just used keywords long term. So have you guys heard about the concept of pop-up communities?
Well, give us a brief description.
So that is a tactic I've heard about, and again, used more in the consumer space. And it really is, as a new product comes into the market, and I don't know, we can take peanut butter M&Ms, for example, that you create interest and buzz around it by creating a pop-up community that's meant to be quick, you know, loud buzz, and then disappear. You have no long-term plans for it. This is a quarter-to-quarter transactional strategy. And I'm hearing some talk about people making an attempt around some product release to do the same thing in IT.
Wow, that sounds like every product launch I've ever heard of.
Well, but are they thinking, Matt, are they thinking about community, though? I don't normally hear about – I hear about noise around a launch. I don't normally hear about community around a launch.
Oh, yeah. So maybe I'm misappropriating. When I hear pop-up community, I feel like you're trying to get the buzz up in and around a launch period. And then what happens after that initial splash is really up to somebody else. So maybe I'm missing some of the delicate details of this.
Well, I think like in the consumer space, it's meant to die. I mean, there is no plan for continuation. There's no support for it. There's no budget. There's no intention. And I think, again, that sometimes happens a natural death over in our neck of the woods, but it's planned for in the consumer space.
Well, and there's this, I have heard of things like tracking a hashtag or tracking the buzz around a launch. I mean, that you could call that a community, but it's really a bunch of people just, it's measuring kind of the chit chat. It sounds like you're talking about something else. Amy, do you think this is a reasonable tactic?
I really think this is, again, to your point you were just making, John, I think this is where IT has got it right. I think you can create life relationships and deeper brand, more meaningful brand relationships with people. I mean, I get the point, but do it as a contest, or do it as, if you've got a strategy that's meant to be short term, I don't think community or relationships is the right place to exercise. It's a tactic within a community, within a broader strategy. But I think your goal, and maybe it is just based on our buying cycle and the fact that it's not $1.59 at the corner store to get a router, that you want to think about your lifetime value of a customer. You want to think about your upsell. You want to think about converting. It's just we're coming at it, I think, very differently.
Yeah, I have a contrarian angle, and it's for one very particular reason. And that is that I have huge respect for being forthright. And I'm not sure if these pop-up communities come out saying like, hey, we're really pumped and we want to get you pumped, and here's the timeline on what we're talking about. But the idea of having a planned life cycle for a project, you got to respect that just a little bit, because we've all been part of projects, and I don't want to make you give too much information out so publicly, but we've all been part of projects that everyone's pretending that all of our energy is going to be concentrated on it for the rest of our careers. And really, it's something that needs to be done for the next 30 days to help bootstrap a new project, and we pretend that it's the biggest thing since sliced bread, and it's not at all. It's part of a bigger strategy that will then transition into a separate strategy, but we make a community on our community site, or we start a new Twitter hashtag, and then it slowly dies a natural death as we're talking about it. But I don't think there's anything natural about letting things that are controlled by us die naturally. I think it's actually being less forthright with our audience, saying how much energy we're going to put into this.
I would still argue those are sort of tactics underneath that broader strategy. I think that, I think there are differences between consumer, but I get your point.
Right, right. I come at this from a different angle. So two thoughts. One, depends on your goal, right? Is the goal of the conversation of this pop-up community to have a conversation with the company or between the members of the community? A lot of the things we do in terms of long-term community is about fostering that second thing. People talking to each other, people having stable identities so that they recognize each other. And in fact, that was one of the fascinating things. I was just on this podcast called Social Pros. I guess maybe we should link to it in the show notes, but I was explaining what we did at VMware. And that's one of the things that they found fascinating, that we had these communities that lasted for years, and community members who were members of them for years. And they're like, how do you find each other? And how do you know each other? And how long do people stay in the communities? And I'm like, well, years. And then we meet up at conferences, and we it's like, and we hug each other, and we were on Facebook friends. And they really found it fascinating and kind of bizarre. That's my take. And so one, that what is your purpose? A lot of these pop-up communities, I'm guessing, don't have any peer-to-peer conversation. It's mostly conversation with the company. But now let's think of it from a platform perspective, and let's think of it from a generational perspective. So we're of generations where, Facebook, things are permanent. Right, you put up photos on Facebook, and then they're the history. Back, even when things were transient, on forums and bulletin boards, right? They had histories. You could go back into threads. You could see the history of what went on. And stuff was permanent. Our digital stuff was so hard to make that we left it up there once we made it, right? Because it was hard to change. We're in an age now where we're realizing that everything doesn't have to be permanent. Things can be transient. And that both means things like Snapchat, and it means things like startup bus, where, you know, people come together in a bus on the way to South by Southwest and build a whole startup, quote unquote, a whole site and a whole service, you know, in a week, right? So you can spin up a new community, fully functioning community site with services more than just, you know, threads, a fully functional site in just a very short amount of time, you know, in a week if you really did it right, overnight. So why does everything have to be permanent? And what we try to do is we say, oh, let's have this launch. Okay, well, what are our tools? What are our existing tools? Well, we've got this forum that we have set up, that we've had set up for years. Let's have people talk on the forum. Well, what if we kind of reinvent that? What if I have a big old webinar? What if I wanted the people that went to the webinar to have a place to ask questions and talk to each other for a few weeks afterwards?
Yeah.
Or what if I had a product launch and the same thing? Like, why can't we rethink these things as perhaps and give permission to have transient spaces, Amy? I just blew your mind, didn't I?
My mind is blown.
Actually, I heard the mic drop.
The Yeti. And then he said, ow, ow. I don't disagree with all of that, but again, maybe it's a semantics argument we're having, because I think you're still saying you value the relationship with the person. You don't want to lose track of the person. You don't want to dismiss the person. You want the conversations to evolve and change. And I think you made a great point. I mean, it's true. I think the old days of the web were, it's different than it is now. We are, maybe it's a big data problem. Maybe it's a, who knows what problem, but, things are seen differently than they were. But I think that the concept of relationships and long-term relationship building still exists.
Yeah.
That's my argument. I think that is, again, to push back and to sort of agree with what you were saying when we kicked this second piece off, that we actually have that right in a way that maybe, you know, I know consumer brands obviously think about lifetime value and they think about their super fans and their tiers of fans. But I think that the investment that we make because of the investment our buyers make in us is pretty important.
Yeah. And I would, in almost seemingly counter opinion from what I said before, how I'm a big fan of this idea of spinning up and spinning down communities based on demand, and maybe even going in there planned. At the same side, I think you both have hit on a point that there's a layer underneath this of real people. And in that layer of peer-to-peer interaction, no matter what the topic and subject matter is, you can't earn trust any faster than you naturally can. There's some human element to community building that you can't spin up and spin down as quickly as you can make a new community forum in half a week. So while the communities as a concept, as a platform, and as a place to talk about a specific object might spin up and spin down, the people that you're investing in better have a longer lifeline, or else you're going to lose any of the momentum that you've spent a lot of money to build.
Or unless you shortcut it so you can be like Mike.
And that sucks.
But what if you thought
Michael
of it
Jordan
like...
can endorse your community. Sorry, go ahead.
But what if you thought of it like events? Like, you end up running, because underneath this thing is people. I agree. So that you've now touched on the question of identity. Mm-hmm. We have several identity systems on the internet now. And I don't mean like, oh, now register for my forum again. Like,
right.
Click every time I go to comment on half a dozen sites, this is what media God. Sites don't get. I want to comment on something and, oh my God, it's going to take me 12 clicks and now I already have a password. Ugh, well, now I got to reset it. It's just not worth it. I'm bored already. I'm not going to comment on your site. And so that's a huge thing that has to be built in this next web, and it's starting to. But we have a couple of identity systems, you know, Google, and just from a technical standpoint, right? Google, Facebook, Twitter, basically.
Right.
So when you go to events, when you go to IT events in your town, you have a tendency to run into the same people. So, but they could be different events, right? They don't all have to be the same event. They don't all have to be in the same hall. So I'm trying to think beyond the core set of influencers that we deal with on a global basis, and you know, that those core set of unicorns and V experts and Cisco champions and EMC Elect folks, but the just the regular customer folks and partner folks, you know, that live in Albuquerque and Cleveland and, you know, and Minnesota and Minneapolis. So they have a tendency to run into each other at local events. So why couldn't we spin up a meeting room with a identity system? And it could be a vendor's identity system like a VMware single sign-on, or it could be a Facebook or Google Plus or Twitter identity, and then you would just tend to run into the same people, and you would tend to run into the same employees, and it would kind of give the dynamics of an event. I mean, doesn't is that maybe could that be where we're headed? Would that be a good compromise to these pop-up communities?
Interesting.
See, I think that's real and authentic and a huge saver, you know? Let it be something like your Twitter handle follows you, or yeah, that single sign-on concept, that to me is different. That's, you know, to me, one of the holy grails is let any of your social information, your metadata be, it is a personally, from database perspective, it is personally identifiable information, right? It's a single unique factor. And therefore, you should be able to use any one of those factors to trace you around if you so choose. I mean, it creeps people out, I guess, to some extent. But in terms of community and in terms of us gathering together, it can be a huge time savings and permit people to engage you across multiple platforms, events, et cetera. So I love the concept.
Two follow-ups to that, John. One comes from just, yes, the answer is yes, you can do that, especially based on geolocation. I'm pretty sure that's called a VMUG, and that's very well proved out. So it allow me to predict the future based on the past.
But I was thinking the same thing, Matt.
Yeah, there's
right,
already...
Right. User groups work, yes.
User groups work really freaking well because... and that leads into my second thought very clearly, that there's something that no matter how much platform and how many layers and how easy it is to socially connect over the internet we get, there is an absolute demand for face-to-face connectivity. And yeah. I don't know if that is just Darwinian evolution at its finest or just something Freudian. I don't really care what theory we use to explain it, but from our social community building angle, it's fundamental that you cannot replace the power of face-to-face connectivity. So however you get people face-to-face, in person, at events, is always going to be a factor in community building, whether it's a pop-up community or a permanent community.
Would that imply then that a global pop-up community is impossible because it's just strangers running into each other?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of variables, right? Because you say pop-up, I think a platform that allows us to interact for a brief amount of time and not really care. My global pop-up community, or like the different hobbies I have that I tweet about on Twitter, and then people will follow and then unfollow as I stop talking about it. So I don't want to abuse the term because I feel like we're trying to talk about a particular consumer grade idea of let's get people really excited about something and then talk about it and then not care anymore.
We do all agree that starting up a new Facebook page or Twitter account for a particular product launch is a really, really stupid idea.
Oh my God.
Oh, without a doubt.
Such litter. Yeah. That kind of thing is, that's pop-up stupidity. Did I say that out loud?
No. Well, I mean, it's very just practically, there's a practical reason you don't do it is because all these things are opt-in, so you won't have very many followers by the time you have your launch event, and then it'll go away, and it's just, you just won't have an audience.
And the whole concept, and I've heard this before, like, oh, it makes it easy to track. Well, okay, that doesn't mean it's the right solution.
Or even inventing a crazy, crazy-ass hashtag that you expect people to use. That doesn't work.
It's really easy to track, though.
And Matt, then you'll love point number three here that we're going
to
debate.
I don't want to.
Yes. So in the consumer space, we have all seen this. You know, like it or nine kittens die. It is measure everything in terms of likes, follows, things that you can count easily, which drives, I think, strategically, those consumer agencies, brands, internal groups to really push for likes, follows, et cetera. And with the idea that if you have 10,000 likes, then 500 sales will follow of, you know, bags of peanut butter M&Ms, whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, Amy, is that this brings us back full circle that we talked about celebrity ship and how, you know, somebody might get hired for a particular need because they have 500,000 followers on Twitter. No one's bothering to check what type of followers they are and whether they're segmented by our market because, quite frankly, that's hard. That's hard to do. And you know what else is hard to do? Having metrics that actually mean anything to your business and putting the infrastructure in place to causally connect social traffic to lead generation to qualifying that lead in a meaningful way that will lead you to a potential sale that is more expedited than a cold sale that didn't go through this funnel. And so I think, like, at my most simple level, I would just say that most people are lazy with this stuff and are dealing with the peanuts that they can count that justify their job and their strategy. But the positive counter posit is that it's truly easier than ever to put together a small collection of tools that will measure things in a causal way. I still think the average knowledge gap is severe and people are still counting page views and not paying attention to whether that impacts sales.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you really think the consumer side is still stuck in counting page views and likes?
I have to think there is some sort of payment strategy where, you know, a puppy goes to heaven if they get more likes and follows, because it seems to be what they optimize for. And I feel like we get a little bit of blowback from that consumer side, you know, social selling strategy over an enterprise where people can over optimize for that instead of really, like you said, really doing that old fashioned, boring, but necessary, you know, boring and heavy quotes there. You know, the actual work of what's your buying center, what are you trying to accomplish, what's the time frame, you know, just good old-fashioned marketing. Because really, I'm going to even argue, not only do we commit random acts of marketing here, we actually do it on purpose. And in some ways, we are the most old-fashioned of the lot.
Is that the
truth? Do you really think about buying centers when it comes to your Twitter accounts and things like that? Can you really connect them?
Yes.
Okay. That's good. You're good. I'm of two minds about this. On one hand, some of the stuff I read over in the consumer space, I see people starting to realize that, you know, these fake engagement numbers are really not very useful. So I see people getting beyond that. On the other hand, I was on this podcast, The Social Pros, and I made some offhand, they were asking me about content or something, and I made some offhand comment about, well, yeah, we don't do a lot of Happy Friday pictures, you know, Happy Friday on Facebook and get everybody to like us, because we actually make real content and there's no end of content to make because there's always a new product or always a new white paper, or there's, you know, these big tech companies, you know, shoot out just cannons full of content, technical content. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, come on over to the consumer side. You can do kitten pictures all day long. It still works. So I kind of had the feeling that they that's still a large part of what they did. There are all these agencies churning out, you know, kitten pictures and Happy Friday and what are you packing for lunch? And maybe there's something about it, like brand advertising, that works. Maybe there's something very psychologically comforting about a brand wishing you a Happy Friday.
Positive reinforcement from anything that seems like an external force will continue to be powerful in people's days. I love to be told that I'm smart and good at things, even from random brands that don't know me. It's a simple psychological hack that will definitely positively impact a brand impression. And you know what? I think, to quote a past guest, Scott Stratton at Unmarketing, so many people are sucking so bad at marketing these days that being mediocre gets you pretty far. And socially shouting out to people that even remotely mention your brand is kind of mediocre. It should be kind of commonplace, but I still think there's such a lack of presence at times and immediacy that can get you pretty far.
That I don't even know what to say.
So, I mean, here's a counterexample that I'm terrified to admit, but is interesting. What about the little giveaways to just put us back in our under our own microscope here? Like, we've all been part of companies that have given away some sort of product, or you go to a tech show and sit and watch our strategy talk for 10 minutes and you might win an iPad mini. That sort of semi-sponsoring people to listen to your content, and then you actually get potential leads from that. So how's that any better than the like our stuff and we'll enter you in for a trip to Hawaii?
Well, I think it's, I don't know, a lot of the consumer tactics, it really does end with a just like and follow, and that's everything that's valuable. And those are the metrics that are shared.
It has to do with just there's no offer for that return. Like there's nothing that they could possibly win. Is that the problem?
No, I think it's a matter of just connecting it to the larger sales, to connecting it to a larger strategy. Because I think that one of social's problems and how it got a lot of black eyes, at least on enterprise side maybe, or people dismissing it as fluffy light, et cetera, it was, again, some of that consumer training where it seemed, you know, not connected to marketing as a whole, not connected to an overall strategy, that it was just really like a wild like fest. And that was the end goal, and not really evaluating what content was consumed and why. You know, was it timing? Was it content? All the things, all the interesting kind of second tier things you can do that are behind the likes, follows, etc. Peeling it back one layer and really thinking about what that means and what you can do more and less of, and modulating your strategy accordingly.
That's a great point.
So in terms of the event stuff, I think that's just part of the social contract there. And hopefully you put a butt in a seat and they actually did listen for the 10 minutes. So in payment, you give them some token of gratitude, like a little, you know, squishy ball or something. Part of that, it's better than some booth babe accosting you in the aisle and swiping your badge. Let me tell you a story about metrics that I encountered recently. And this points to the difficulty in just measuring likes and follows, and even trying to have a coherent content strategy and trying to look back and do analysis of what worked and what didn't. We were looking at a campaign recently, and we were organized in terms of campaigns, even though they're kind of perpetual a lot of times. And we only look at ROI and statistics in the context of a given activity or campaign or organizing initiative, right? You don't look at ROI or activity in terms of the whole thing, because it's just meaningless. So we were looking at a particular set of content and a particular campaign and a particular set of tweets and Facebook posts that had gone out. And we noticed on Facebook that one of these had performed much better than the other. And what we were trying to do is we were trying to correlate the position in the funnel of the asset with the channel. So the working theory was that top of the funnel assets, which are basically awareness, worked best on Facebook, but bottom of the funnel assets, which are, you know, trials or have a salesman contact me or things like that, worked best in other channels, but not on Facebook. And that had kind of been our working theory for us. And what we noticed is this one particular post blew up on Facebook. And we're like, well, I wonder what happened. Let's look at it. And it turns out it was a bottom of the funnel offer, because it was an offer for a trial. But the copy editing was really good, because we had hired a copy editor for that one. And it had particularly, it was resonant. It was a question around a thing that customers were confused about, a product bundle that customers were confused about. And it hit a nerve, right? And that one, everyone was like, yes, I like, yes. And they shared it and they liked it and they consumed it, right? And we got click-throughs from it. So that's where I struggle with metrics. So even when you're looking at the metrics, the metrics aren't telling you what you think they are. How can the metric show you, yeah, the reason that asset A performed better than asset B was not because of the asset, but because the copy editing on the update for asset A was better than the copy editing for, and it was resonant. And how do you replicate that? So I don't have answers, but I'm just saying this stuff is way more complicated than looking at an engagement chart over time would have you think.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, John. And you're asking a incredibly advanced, multi-tiered sort of question, right? Because you have to have any sort of rational conversation about what's performing better, you have to analyze, you know, the awareness around given topics and the content editor. That's a really interesting variable. Like even the formatting of where you add the links.
Yeah. We have people that just shove stuff into our system and they don't actually put pictures and stuff with it. That stuff does terribly. Even if it's really good assets, you know?
It really is fascinating. No one's going to undermine that this is exceptionally complex, but like this, to think that it's just going to be like, oh, if I see more hits on a topic that had to do with virtual desktops than a topic that had to do with storage, then virtual desktops must be what we should talk about. That you really have to take away a lot of your assumptions that either the content category or even the channel or the part of the funnel you're in are the relevant factors and look at a larger picture. So I guess it just kind of highlights that some organizations are earlier on in their science of this than others. And in that case, like, yeah, you're just experimenting and you need to understand what are your variables and not misappropriate one for the other.
Yeah, I have one rule of thumb. I've boiled it down. One rule of thumb, and I'll put this in a book. You guys can, we can publish it.
This is a tech preview.
Yeah, yeah. The rule of thumb is don't suck. The rest is easy.
It's really true. It's really true. And the wisdom of crowds will tell you if you suck.
Yeah, that's the asterisk.
And I will say, if we're talking about does consumer strategy work in enterprise IT, sucking really doesn't.
Yeah,
there you go.
And I mean, if professional social media people are listening to this, they're thinking, well, what about A/B testing and all that sort of stuff? And yeah, we do all that stuff too. So I mean, there's a lot of science that goes into this of not sucking.
It's true. It's true. Maybe that's the title of the book: The Science of Not Sucking.
I like science.
I think we're on to something.
John's a PhD. We could rock this.
Absolutely. So, any concluding thoughts there? Did we who won this match? Do you think? And of course, we've got to hear from our listeners what they think. But does consumer strategy work in enterprise IT? Do we reach a grand conclusion other than don't suck?
I mean, I'm going to drop a John Mark Troyer knowledge drop before he does on this, and I think that truly enterprise technology is a harbinger for what ends up becoming standard in consumer tech or even just consumer markets in general. I think we are actually in a very particular niche that's ahead of the curve in how intimate and connected the marketing funnel needs to be to have any bearing on sales. If history is any sort of teller of the future here, we've seen that the behaviors that we've had to implement over the last few years are just starting to trickle into the larger market. And I think that kind of reinforces that we're a little ahead of the curve in this one particular case because we have a very particular market that demands it of us.
I'm going to go the other way on this one, just for the sake of argument. I think that we cannot bypass our own brain wiring and psychology, and that over time, the geeks have to, or at least the marketers to geeks, have to bring a little brand psychology into the mix. And, you know, when you go out and plaster ads everywhere, yeah, that's wasted money. It's a giant money pit. But, and I would like some of that budget, frankly. But it's also, it does stuff to your brain. That psychologists will tell you this repeated familiarity, and also it's a signal that the company has a lot of money and is powerful. So there's all sorts of stuff going on the brand side that is complementary to what we're doing on the kind of trust solution provider solutions marketing side that we do.
An interesting kind of conclusion, and I'm thinking, you know, somewhere between the two, I think communities, we have something pretty special and rare in enterprise IT just because we have so much passion. People are willing to go way beyond their day job to learn, to share, to really, you know, own the brand, if you will. And I think that, you know, my favorite conversation about org charts, you know, abstract the org chart, we could tear down some walls and really do some interesting things, I think, if we worked across some of these silos, because I think a lot of us come with different disciplines, different backgrounds, and maybe working with the PR or traditional branding teams, and listening and sort of thinking about what they're doing and how that could map into a community strategy and where we could give them what I always like to call the geek sourcing, kind of that geek's eye view, and where we could learn some of the, you know, the strategy behind what they're doing. Could be interesting. I've definitely softened my position a bit since the beginning of this podcast. Though I still think the don't suck motto is way on point. And please don't hire Michael Jordan to sell me a router. So with that incredible lot of wisdom, we are signing off for another week of the Geek Whispers. Though we just disparage people for liking things, and depending on that, we are in fact going to ask you to like our podcast, give us some thumbs up somewhere, some stars, a review, a meaningful comment, tell your mom about us, whatever is going to get the word out. Please help us share the Geek Whispers word, and we'll whisper at you again next week. So thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Geek Whispers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Ahoy, hoy, hoy.
Hello.
Hello.
Is it me you're tweeting for?
Just don't tweet for me, Argentina.
tweet on.
Tweet on me when you're not strong. I'll be your follower. I'll help you carry on. RT.
No! Tweet! Till Brooklyn! No, tweet!